You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Welcome to Radiant Creators. Check us out at radiantcreators.com. We're also on alternatecurrentradio.com. Check us out there too. As always, like, comment, and share. That gets the show out there and helps us tremendously. Today on Radiant Creators, we're talking to Fiona Edgar. She's a karmic astrologer and tarot reader from Northern Ireland. She's claircognizant and clairvoyant and has the ability to see past lives, including lifetimes spent on other planets. Fiona has studied astrology and tarot for over 20 years and has been practicing professionally for 5 years. She's great at what she does. We really got hold of a lot of wisdom in this interview. I think it's pretty great. So enjoy the show. So you've got a very radiant array of offerings and talents on your site, scorpionmoonkarmicastrology.com. And I think maybe a great way to start would be tell us about what you offer on the site, the content that you're putting out. And then also after that, well, then we'll start on, you know, who are you and how did you get there?
Okay. Yeah, well, first and foremost, I am a karmic astrologer. So I read people's birth charts. I'm able to identify karmically, you know, where they are, their kind of strengths, their weaknesses, their hidden talents, the kind of collective story of their past lives. You know, I can also see, identify what's coming up for them in the future. I also read the tarot. I can do past life readings, and I'm also clairvoyant. So when a client books me for a reading, I generally use all of those to kind of see where they're at and, you know, answer any questions that they have. How I got there, I've been studying everything to do with spirituality and the occult for as long as I can remember. You know, when I was a little kid, I kind of had experiences that I suppose weren't exactly normal. And yeah, I just was always aware that there was a whole other world out there that was hidden, which is what the world, what the word occult means. So throughout my teenage years, I read lots of books on astrology, spirituality, mediumship, you know, everything really. And I actually studied astrology, I think it's about 20 years now. And I used to do readings for people on Facebook. And actually one of my exes said, you know, you're really good at this. Why don't you do this professionally? This was a number of years back. So I decided to set myself up as an astrologer. I made a page on Facebook and my website and, you know, by word of mouth and, you know, being on the radio and things like that, I've got to where I am today, and I am delighted and happy to be here.
Mystical, unique people, that tends to be a common thing that happens. When they're kids, they have mystical experiences.
Actually, the earliest experience that I had, I'm sure that I was probably no more than 4 or 5. I was sleeping and I woke up and I was aware that there was like this figure at the end of my bed. And I knew that, you know, I wasn't scared, which is surprising, but I knew that the person that was standing at the end of my bed was not from this world. But I felt quite reassured by their presence. You know, I also had odd dreams. I used to experience a lot of astral projection. You know, I was aware of kind of leaving my body at night and, you know, coming back into my body was like a big jump. And actually, I told my sister about this and she was able to explain to me what it was. Just things like that. And I always was aware that I suppose it was intuition. I was always able to read people quite well and know things about them without them telling me. But I wasn't I wasn't very open about these things because I kind of knew intuitively that I needed to keep them to myself.
So you're living in Scotland right now? Is that where you're at?
No, I'm actually in Northern Ireland.
No, I'm sorry. Northern Ireland. Okay. How do you feel that, is that where you've always lived? Do you feel that, I always feel that place has a strength, has something to it. I've oftentimes thought that like an accent comes from a place. Do you feel that where you lived actually supported that evolution, that connection?
I guess it's a bit of both. I've lived here all of my life, apart from a couple of years in my early 30s, where I actually lived in the States for a little while. I lived in Detroit and St. Louis. But, we had Northern Ireland experienced, some terrorism and what we call the Troubles. So it's a good place to live now, but when I was growing up in the early 80s, it was quite a violent place. I would say that, because of experiences that I had in my childhood, maybe my gifts didn't open up as quickly as they should, or, they did open up, but then I kind of suppressed them. So that's kind of hard to say, but the energy of Ireland is very special. Anyone that comes here who is intuitive or gifted says that, there are a lot of spirits here. It has a rich history. There's an energy to Ireland that you can't explain. And living in the States, I became aware that even more so that I came from a very special place. So, I'm very grateful to be here. I actually live in the countryside, and I live beside an ancient, what they call fairy forts. So, it's quite a cool place to live. There's a lot of spirit activity. Certainly there's the sense that you're never alone. Have you ever visited here, Craig?
I've never been there. It's definitely on the agenda that's going to happen in the next couple of years will be to visit Ireland and actually quite look around while there. Well, fairy forts, those weren't necessarily positive things historically, were they? I mean, we see fairies as these, fun things in the garden, and they are. But in Ireland, where the fairies were, that was actually a dangerous place, wasn't it, historically? And I could be way off, I know.
Yeah, you're actually right. I think because of Hollywood and Disney and all of that, we kind of get this impression that fairies are these little winged Tinkerbells that fly around and sprinkle magic dust everywhere. But, in Ireland, they were feared. People used to leave offerings out for them, like a bowl of milk or a slice of cake to kind of appease them. And being clairvoyant, I can see them, but they really don't look like Tinkerbell. They look quite human in their form and their size. So I think it's best to be on the right side of them. They can certainly stir things up and cause misfortune if you drop litter or you kind of try to destroy where they live. But I think I have a good, healthy fear of them, but I appreciate their presence as well.
Do you feel that they're present anywhere there is nature, or are there just certain places that they really like to congregate?
Yeah, there's definitely some places where they tend to congregate more than others. Where I live, for example, I live in a place called Dromore in County Down. The landscape is very much alive with them. Just because a place tends to have trees or a bit of grass doesn't mean that you'll find them there. They very much like to be left alone. So they'll pick kind of desolate rural areas to live in.
And you mentioned that people like to stay on the positive side of them when they're around. It reminds me of something that Eric Raines, someone that we interviewed on the show, mentioned. He said that if you grow a houseplant, let's say you're not in the country, you grow a houseplant, or if you have some land around you, you grow anything, and you tend it and you love it, then nature itself will actually protect you. You'll start to have this relationship with it that's very close. Are there fairies like that, or are they just basically something you should just kind of leave alone? Like, here's a cookie, and we'll just call it a treaty.
I do think that you can, to a certain extent, you can cultivate relationships with them. I feel quite close to them, and, you know, like I said, I would sometimes leave offerings out for them, but I'm kind of in the minority now, you know, with Christianity becoming, you know, the predominant religion in Ireland. Those beliefs have kind of fallen away, but they're still very much present. But yeah, you know, nature definitely has a, you know, trees have spirits, plants have a spirit, the rivers do. And you can connect with those spirits. You know, for example, if you needed to heal some part of your personality, you can ask the river to help you to cleanse it away and develop a relationship with that spirit. So it's very shamanic in a sense.
A karmic and an intuitive astrologer. So when it comes to intuitive astrology, I would imagine anyone who has a naturally strong intuitive nature is going to, of course, you know, their intuition will be an aspect of astrology. And I like that because anyone who's does tarot and they just do tarot is sort of limited. Anybody who does astrology and just does astrology is kind of limited. It seems that intuition is really needed to connect all of those dots. So you're doing all of that, and that's a good thing. So I'd ask, with intuitive astrology, let's just focus on intuition. And so you noticed as when you were young that you had intuition, and then you've been cultivating it. I guess, how are some of the ways that you cultivated it? And then I would say, you know, how can others cultivate intuition, their intuition, into their daily lives? Because it really is our, you know, seventh, it's one of our senses that, unfortunately, our society and its, I guess, city-dwelling, somewhat domesticated nature has really, it's like we're missing one of our senses. In fact, we are. You know, how can people, like, how come you developed it? It was turned on when you were a kid. How'd you cultivate it? And then how can others? What's a good way to start hanging out with your intuition?
Yeah, well, you know, intuition and psychic abilities is something that you can see in a birth chart. So when I do a reading for a client, I notice that they have certain planets in certain signs or aspects. You know, I can pick up on what those gifts and abilities might be. For myself, for example, my sun sign is Cancer, which is one of the most intuitive signs of the zodiac, and my moon sign is in Scorpio. So I am a double water sign. Water people tend to be very, you know, tuned into energies and vibrations. So I had that in my favor to begin with. Then I started to do tarot readings, mediumship, you know, astrology. Doing things like that on a regular basis is going to really tune your intuition in. Also, I think one of the worst things that you can do is to constantly doubt yourself. You know, I get clients that come to me and they say, I want to know how to develop my abilities. I look at their chart and I see that they do have them, but they constantly second guess themselves. I think the best thing that you can do is to always go with your first instinct or your first thought. Don't try to, you know, to talk yourself out of that. Also, you know, when it comes to things like relationships, I do find that a lot of spiritual people end up in relationships in the beginning with people that lie to them. It seems to be like some kind of spiritual attack to stop them from developing those abilities. So you need to always trust yourself, learn to trust yourself, and to not let other people talk you out of it. Eventually, your intuition or your sixth sense is going to become so strong. That's basically what I did. Also, meditation really helps. Turning off your phone, which is something that's, you know, I'm guilty of that as well, but when you constantly have your phone going, it's interfering with your energy, your psychic senses, just being as close to nature as possible.
Getting away from the noise of Wi-Fi, the noise of the phone. I mean, a cell phone ultimately is making noise, and it's making a radiant interference with your natural body's energy. I mean, our heart energy reaches, like the heart chakra energy, it reaches out many feet in every direction. I mean, a good 12 to 15 feet, like right there in your immediate area. I mean, of course, it goes out further, but if you had the vision to see it, if you see somebody with a cell phone, it's just absorbing that energy. It's really turning them off. I mean, people don't, like, oftentimes you can see videos on the internet of people with their cell phones doing horrible things, like walking off cliffs, walking into a signpost and such like that. And it isn't just because they're not looking. It's because that natural reach that they have with their senses that are very real, it is being absorbed by that phone. It's being turned off. So literally you're like spiritually and intuitively blinding yourself. It's almost like walking around on a very real level with a blindfold on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite alarming how addicted we are to technology and our phones, and quite dangerous. So my advice to anyone would be, turn it off. For years and years, we got by without having to be in constant contact with each other. It is quite worrying how addicted people tend to get to Facebook, and they start to crave it. And, just leave those things alone. Turn your phone off. Go outside. Walk about in the grass. Connect with the elements, and your intuition is going to blossom.
Just like a cell phone is a technology that helps us communicate with the world that connects us to it, truly we could see our intuition as a technology. Ultimately, it's a spiritual technology, an eclectic technology, however we want to call it. It is real and it is a technology, and that's a technology we could be developing, like, rather than focusing on the phone quite so much. Go out and develop your intuitive technology. And wow, you may feel more connected to all that is than you ever will through a phone. In fact, I can pretty much guarantee that, without a doubt. Well, you mentioned that you do past life regression or past life readings. I look at it like a lot of things that most people would find, really out there or very etherical or imaginary, unreal. I mean, I see as, well, very real, of course. And there's the dog. One second. Hey, that'll do. That'll do, little guy. Hold on. One sec. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. Yeah, the Chihuahua was guarding the castle. So I look at a lot of what is extremely etherical is just breaking it down to a technology, like somebody we interviewed on the show. Well, both Eric Rains and actually what's his name? Ken Rolla. They can take the most etherical concepts and then they can just speak to it so matter-of-factly, because ultimately it is real and it is a technology. And so since you actually do work with past life, regression or connecting people to past lives, how does that technology work? What's actually happening when you're doing that?
There are a couple of different methods that I would use to tap into people's past lives. The first thing that I do is to look at the birth chart, because we can actually see where that person has come from in their past lives, what kind of personality they were, what are some of the lessons that they still need to learn. So that gives me a general idea. There are a couple of points in the birth chart, such as the lunar nodes. The south node would be collectively the person's past lives, the kind of skills that they've developed and the general themes. The north node in the birth chart is kind of where, the territory that they haven't explored that they need to move towards. So the south node, also Saturn, because Saturn is the planet of karma. That would show me some of the karmic lessons that the person still needs to work towards. So I would look at that, first of all. And then usually when I'm reading a chart, I will get information clairvoyantly. I could be looking at someone's Saturn and I will start to see, a face or a landscape and I start to get information about who they were. Then also I will use my tarot cards. You know, I might ask a question like, show me what this person did for a living in their last life or in this particular lifetime, and then I'll be able to get the information from tarot cards. So I don't know exactly where all of this is coming from. You know, it's just, you know, I suppose the Akashic records, I'm tapping into those. I'm reading the energy in the person's aura, because a person's aura contains all of their previous lifetimes as well. I'm not sure how other people do it, but those are the methods that I use.
I guess you could say having that multidimensional consciousness where you can look, you know, at multiple timelines at once. So it makes plenty of sense to me. Yeah, your site's actually called Scorpio Moon Karmic Astrology, and so you have a moon in Scorpio.
That's right.
That's challenging. Like, I've often found that most people who have strong Scorpio in their chart, be it rising, moon, you know, north or south node, it seems like a hard life. So have you found that having a Scorpio moon has been a challenge? I know anything can be made positive, but have you found it to be a bit of a struggle? Because I just noticed, like I say, in people's charts, people who have a strong Scorpio, they have to really turn that self-awareness on young, and they have the ability to be super powerful, or if not, it makes for a pretty hard life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it has been difficult, very difficult at times. You know, I kind of briefly mentioned earlier about that my family were affected by, you know, the troubles or the terrorism in Northern Ireland. So that happened when I was quite young, at the age of 8. And, you know, Scorpio moon people can be very guarded with their emotions. They find it very hard to trust others because of experiences that they have had in childhood. And that was certainly the case for me. So, you know, I became this person that was always suspicious of other people's motives. I found it hard to trust, but it made me very good at reading other people. I'm very good at reading body language, facial expressions, you know, the things that people don't say in that pause. But yeah, I do have had a bit of a crazy life at times, full of ups and downs. You know, Scorpio people are very intense. We feel everything so, you know, intensely and passionately. And, you know, we live in a bit of a black and white world. So, yeah, there are pros and cons. But, yeah, certainly Scorpio people, whether it be in the moon or, like you say, the sun or the rising, it can be difficult, but the goal is to become the phoenix and to rise from the ashes. We go through trauma, but then we are reborn through the trauma.
Rise from the trauma. That's challenging. And it seems like I just got to hand it to you. I'm glad you're doing well, because I've seen it go. There doesn't seem to be a lot of mid-range. You know, most people, many people, they can have great stars and they don't really live up to them. Some people, they have crap stars and they live really, really well. And I find that with anyone with a strong Scorpio in their chart, they're either just badass spiritual warriors and they make it happen, they have great gifts, or they're sociopaths. So you're on the good side of things, and I'm glad you are. So hard stars, yeah. But you're making it happen.
Yeah, thanks. You're right. You know, I've noticed that as well. You know, when we go through trauma, especially during our childhoods, you know, we can either, it's very much like the energy of Chiron. So Chiron is the planet of that rules people's wounds, but also healing. So we can either use that wound to heal ourselves and to help others, or, you know, we can sting like a scorpion and hurt other people. So personally, I prefer to be a good person. But yeah, some Scorpio people can be ruthless.
definitely. Or just kind of trapped in their own stuff. You know, there can be a bit of a dark cloud that follows them around. I'm glad that you use the North and the South node. I've always thought that's kind of one of the most powerful aspects of a chart. I myself look at like you know, month of birth, rising, moon, and north and south node. And it seems like to me there's, gosh, you can get so much out of just that. So one question I'd ask as a bit of an astrologer myself, do you feel that computers and technology we have now has made better astrologers, or maybe a little bit anemic astrologers? Because I feel like, okay, sure, we can see every aspect, and oh my gosh, you can see so much now with the computer when you put the data in. But even with all of that, I don't feel that, I will say most astrologers are very powerful. But it seems like from the tutelage that I had, I was very lucky. I really learned to focus on month of birth, sun, rising. Yeah, month of birth, rising, nodes, moon. And just that. I mean, you can look at other things too, of course. It's all there. You can look at it. But if you really focus on like the real foundations of the chart and give them some weight, I really find that, gosh, in simplicity is the power.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the rise of Facebook, and I have noticed that there are a lot of those kind of astrology meme pages on Facebook, and, you know, I'm not really sure how I feel about that. I mean, some of them are funny and clever, but let's face it, it's trash astrology. So it's, you know, I'm not very comfortable with that, because astrology is a very complex subject. It's a very useful subject if you know what you're doing. You know, it can help us with ourselves. It can help us gain self-awareness. It helps our relationships. So to see it reduced to this kind of, you know, comical thing with a few words on a funny picture, I'm not really comfortable with that. And let's face it, it doesn't take a good astrologer to be able to create those. You know, on the other hand, there is so much information out there that we didn't have years ago. You know, we can, you know, you can Google everything about the fixed stars, you know, about Chiron. You can explore your entire birth chart as a novice or a beginner astrologer just by Googling all your aspects. So it's kind of up to you what you do with that information. That was one of the ways that I, you know, I became a very experienced astrologer, is that, you know, I'd be watching a movie. I would look up the actor's birth chart. I would study it. I would see how it's connected with their, you know, the story of their life. So you can become a very good astrologer by using technology, but, you know, please try and stay away from those kind of meme pages.
Oh, no, it makes sense. And it seems like a person always has to kind of develop a certain excellence in their own life. Like, you can't focus on one thing, I believe. Like I mentioned, people who focus on only tarot, they're really good at tarot, but maybe they're not even very intuitive or spiritual people, you know, and the same with astrology and such. It seems like you really have to... It seems like, well, you self-taught, but it seems like if there was a formal study for people, it would have to have this kind of curriculum of excellence, right? You'd have to work on many disciplines to actually become good at any one, or kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none, often better than a master of one. I don't know. It's like when you go to college, you have to take all these courses that you don't care about to get your degree. You know, but I think with any spiritual pursuit, you know, be it astrology, tarot, just spirituality, enlightenment, whatever a person is working on, being a healer, it takes a well-rounded study of everything, or else, I don't know, a person's just sort of, I don't know, they got a dark cloud over them, you know?
You know, personally, I have always been fascinated, like I said, with everything to do with spirituality. So through my own practices, I kind of developed multiple skills. You know, I think it's a shame to kind of just stay with one thing. Like you say, you know, with the tarot, you know, it's easy to do a tarot reading because, you know, you can look at the pictures. It's pretty obvious what the pictures mean. But to be a really good tarot reader, you need to develop your intuition. So, you know, you can throw in a bit of mediumship and you do a reading that changes someone's life.
When people do readings, whether it be tarot, intuitive, astrology, those who are hearing it, I mean, like for instance, if a person is a healer and someone comes for a healing, well, if that person is full of trauma and uncertainty and self-doubt and they're healing somebody, well, they're traumatizing that person. They're not healing them. And so really it's the same with any other art form. You might say like tarot or astrology, being intuitive for a person. People take that to heart. And I think that, you know, many who do just one, many people out there are not really striving for that greater excellence in life so that they're certain that they are giving a person good energy, you might say, giving a person a true, real, open channel to the divine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly what you mean. Also, I think that we need to be careful. And this is something that I had to learn as well, is that just because someone, claims to be a spiritual person, just because someone is psychic or a healer, that does not necessarily mean that they are a really good person. I've known people that were into mediumship, they practice it professionally, or, you know, astrologers, and they have been sociopaths, and, you know, just all round kind of negative, nasty people. So for people that are going for these treatments or readings, I would like to say, if your intuition is alarming you or alerting you, then you should not work with that person. I have, like I said, that your intuition is not just limited to loving spiritual people. There are bad people out there with really good intuition as well. So you need to be careful about that.
Oh, definitely. I think one thing to learn for an individual has to learn as they go along is your intuition. We can also call it your discernment. It doesn't see things or judge things necessarily in the way that our like waking mind does. If it sees something as beautiful as good, if a light kind of shines and you see a path, oh, go that way. That's great. I mean, there's lots of ways that we feel our intuitive guidance, which is positive. But sometimes when we really get hit with a negative vibe, people get knocked out of their intuitional resonance. They think that isn't necessarily intuition. They get turned off but in truth, intuition, discernment, our natural instinct, which is in us, and it is a spiritual, it's an eclectic technology. It's real. I've come across people and been like, oh my gosh, what a black hole. You know, that is a scary individual. And we don't have to judge that. Like, we don't have to think, oh, I'm a bad person because I'm thinking that, or I don't want to think ill of somebody. No, like, we have to sort of let intuition tell us and show us and help us feel what is real without playing by any rules, without being afraid to let it show us things that are downright nasty.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with you. I think that, among the kind of New Age community, there's certain individuals that, you know, that the whole love and light thing, you know, sometimes we have to face the darkness, and by pretending that everything is rosy and beautiful all the time, we're kind of denying ourselves healing that we need. So yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that one.
What are the benefits? What can a person get, and I might even say a family, really, have in having an astrologer on call, basically? I mean, I certainly know my chart, and you know, most people that I know their charts, and it's very good to get kind of a checkup every year from an astrologer that you trust. Hey, what's happening for me and such like that. And of course, a business, like when you incorporate it, that's kind of its birthday and things like that. I guess, say, what is the importance? What benefits have you seen with your clients of actually having an astrologer that they trust and that they use in their life?
Yeah. Well, astrology is life. Everything in your life is reflected in the heavens above us. The planets aren't the cause of any issues in our lives. They are just a reflection of choices that we've made and, you know, energetic influences. I suppose the number one use of astrology would be relationship compatibility. So first of all, that would be love. My client meets someone, they go on a date, they manage to get the person's date of birth and birth time, and they ask me to do a reading to compare the charts. So I'm able to see whether I think that the relationship will last, if it's going to be an honest, a wholesome, fulfilling relationship, if there are any red flags, you know, if it's, for example, if I think the person is going to be dishonest. When I look at a birth chart, I can see everything about the person. There's really nothing is hidden from me. So, you know, certainly it can save us from pretty bad relationships. We can also use astrology to plan important dates such as weddings, house moves. So I astrologically timed my wedding date. It's important to get married on a day when, for example, Mercury is in retrograde, so you're not going to have constant communication issues, or, you know, perhaps, you know, the marriage isn't going to last. You can literally use astrology for everything in your life, and it is so useful. You can use astrology to see when you may have money issues, or, you know, you may get sick. So you see that you're going to have a Saturn transit in your sixth house in your birth chart, which is the house of health. So you think, okay, I've got to go to the dentist and get a checkup. I have to make sure I eat well, avoid extreme sports for a while. You know, it's so useful. I wish that everyone could learn some astrology, or at least have access to a good astrologer. It was the Catholic Church in the Renaissance period that banned the use of astrology, because they didn't want people having this much power and control over their own lives.
It was integrated, you might say, and then as it was integrated, it was degraded. Yeah. Well, luckily we got away from that, and astrology is everywhere now, so take that. Well, also, if you know, here's a great one for anybody listening to this. You know, hey, if you're listening to this kind of a podcast, if you're listening to this, then I think you're probably pretty with it. And if you do meet somebody that you like, I would just be blatantly honest. I would say, I need to check your credentials first. What's your date of birth, time, and location? If they can't handle that, well, you know what? You don't even have to have their chart read.
Before I met my husband and I was single for a little while, I wouldn't date the person unless I saw their chart, because, you know, I could tell immediately whether it was going to last or not. And I was looking for something, you know, long term. But when I saw my husband's birth chart, I knew that this person standing in front of me was, you know, the one, or, you know, the person that I was going to marry. So it's very useful to kind of back up your own intuition and your own feelings.
Even if a person you met had a great chart, if your intuition still said, I don't know about this person, I would at least call that a draw, a tie. Like, I wouldn't know what to do. Maybe just pass.
Yeah, I think so. It's also very good for identifying certain patterns that we tend to be prone to. So, you know, for example, if I have a client that comes to me and she keeps saying, well, you know, I keep meeting these men that are, you know, I'm so into them, I really like them, but then they always end up cheating on me or using me. So I say, okay, well, let's take a look at your birth chart. And we see that she has, you know, an afflicted Venus. Which I can see stems back to some issues that she may have had with her father or her childhood. So, you know, just becoming aware of that is enough for her to change her attitude, and to change actually the type of person that she is attracted to. I've seen this before, and it's miraculous. The person, when they are healed and when they identify the wound from their childhood, they stop becoming attracted to, these people that are really, really just manifestations of the same wound over and over again.
Well, also, along with an astrologer that people have, like I say, on call, when you have that wise person who's somewhat detached from the situation, who can see it intuitively, karmically, they pass lives, they can see the tarot of it. I mean, they really have all these tools that they can use. It's definitely helpful, because I find that one thing our society is lacking right now, and I think this is huge, is wise counsel. We don't really have any elders, or wisdom is not something which is really sought after. It just seems to me like wise counsel that has those tools available, I mean, it's lacking in our society, in our world.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it is quite sad. I mean, teenagers today, they don't really have very many good role models. They have their parents, but if we look at the type of things that, you know, the artists that they're listening to, you know, there really isn't very much wisdom there. So I do think that it's lacking, especially in the Western world. But, you know, I think with Saturn and Capricorn, people are starting to maybe come round to the idea that more traditional values are actually better for society. I have noticed that more, you know, younger people, the millennials, some of them are actually starting to want to kind of go back to those old traditional values, because they are kind of, they're fed up with the way that modern life is. And they feel this, you know, need to return to something more wholesome.
Yeah, I mean, here in the West, we have our millennials. Well, they're everywhere, but here in the West, we have a lot of millennials that are checking out due to the feels. They're just checked out. Sorry, I can't function this week. Got the feels. But also, we have a lot of really shrewd, very, very smart millennials who are, they're creating something very, very good. They're very, very smart. Well, definitely with the Capricorn energy. I mean, my moon's in Capricorn, so I know all about, you know, being traditional and uptight and striving for mastery. So since that's activated, good. That's definitely a good thing. Because with wisdom in our society, that being something that's lacking, I mean, could you imagine? My dream is everybody grows up with, like, a grandfather like Joseph Campbell and an uncle like Thomas Sheridan. I mean, could you imagine? Oh, my gosh, you know. That would be so amazing. That's what I'm striving for. One thing you mentioned about, like, looking at the chart and say not getting married during Mercury retrograde, you know, or buying a flamethrower or a tank or something like that. Mercury retrograde is happening right now. And so Mercury retrograde really is no joke, and it does happen a couple times a year. And I would say I would ask you, I have a couple questions on it, because it's very relevant. It's happening right now. What is it? How would you describe Mercury retrograde, this dark cloud that goes over our lives a few times a year? I'm being eccentric.
Yeah, you know, it is a dark cloud. It is a bit of a drag. It upsets things. But really, it's just bringing our awareness to issues in our lives that need fixed. So, you know, something is broken, something isn't working. You know, a lot of people have relationship issues and communication issues, but it's an opportunity for us to review and reorganize, you know, things in our lives that aren't necessarily working the best. So we do have to go through it three times a year. You know, it's like this, oh no, it's Mercury retrograde. Let's hide at home and, you know, lock the doors. But, you know, you just have to get on with it. And the best thing to do is identify what the spiritual lesson of the retrograde is going to be before it starts. So if you're not familiar with your chart, you can book a reading with an astrologer. The astrologer will be able to tell you which life issues are going to be affected. You know, is it going to be your job, your home? So once you know what to expect, and identify the lesson, you know, it should be less difficult than previous retrograde. So this one that we're going through at the moment, I think, is pretty bad. But we also have Mars retrograde, which is really difficult. Pretty much everyone that I know has been struggling and going through, you know, emotional issues, and generally not having a very good time. You know, we're having these, like, crazy forest fires all over the planet. It's kind of a reflection of Mars retrograde. A lot of people are angry, you know. But listen, we're going through this for a reason. We also have Venus retrograde coming up towards the end of the year. This year is very important in terms of the evolution of humanity. I think we are all being asked to examine ourselves, develop self-awareness, own up to your own crap, and just try and fix ourselves and progress spiritually so we can move this planet, into another dimension or onto some better times and kind of get rid of some of the darkness. But we can't just sit here and wait for a messiah to come and save us. We need to do it ourselves, individually and collectively. So these retrogrades are actually a really good thing. The worst thing to do is just to sit inside and say, oh no, my life sucks, Mercury is terrible, and, just work with it, see what you need to fix about yourself, and next year is going to be so much better.
Believe me, I know there are times when I see Mercury retrograde coming up and I think, well, I could just stock up on red wine and chocolate and just hide in the house for 3 weeks. I could do it, but I guarantee Mercury will find some reason to scoot you right out the door, because that's how it is. It's definitely, like you mentioned, it's super helpful if people do have their chart read and they do know it and they have an astrologer that they can work with, because oftentimes people just think, okay, it's Mercury retrograde, this is happening. But in truth, there's Mercury retrograde for your country. When was your country born? There's Mercury retrograde for your city, such like that. And also there's Mercury retrograde, of course, for you. So to know what house it's happening in definitely changes everything. And that's really going to help a person, if nothing else, know what to focus on. It really gives a lot of insight, because going into Mercury retrograde blind, well, it just sucks, but you don't know why. But if you can focus your effort, then maybe it's a lot more rewarding.
Yeah. In my own chart, this current Mercury retrograde is going through the fourth house. So that's the house that rules my home. And, we moved house a little while ago. So the retrograde for me has been about, getting the plumbing sorted, getting the water connected, just things like that. So I knew all of that was coming prior. I knew to kind of keep extra money saved so that I would have the money to spend on these things in my new home. It's stuff like that that we need to be aware of before it starts.
During Mercury retrograde, you often feel just a mental dullness. It makes it sort of hard to think and maybe hard to move. And I find that if you will just keep going, keep moving, it's hard. It can feel like it's hard to think. It can feel like you're sort of underwater and you have to kind of swim your way across the room because it's hard to move. Red wine and chocolate does help. But besides that, do you feel that if you are diligent and do your best, strive for certain excellence and understanding of how Mercury is affecting you in your chart during retrograde really pays off? It pays off big time for things you may have been working on for years.
Yeah, yes, I think so. It's also, Mercury retrograde is also a time of completion and getting things wrapped up. So, any ongoing projects that you started before the retrograde, things can intensify during the retrograde period and, you end up getting stuff done. But yeah, our relationships with other people, it's always good to take a look at your partner's charts or your kid's chart before the retrograde hits, so you can see if your partnership is going to be affected by any retrograde issues, such as, your finances, things like that.
So what's going on right now with all the eclipses?
Yeah, we're wrapping up this eclipse season. I think that the last eclipse is on Friday, I'm pretty sure. It's either Thursday or Friday, or over the weekend. Things have been crazy for the past 6 weeks in particular, I think, for everyone. So whatever your personal eclipse story has been, it's going to start wrapping up by the weekend. You should feel an ease off of the pressure. I could be general. Eclipses bring bring, you know, great changes in our lives. They are wild cards. It's hard to know what to expect. They can herald massive life events such as, you know, a birth, a death, a marriage, a change of location, you know, things like that. So, but what I know is that collectively everyone has been feeling immense pressure. So, yeah, towards the weekend, things are going to start wrapping up and we should see a change for the better. After that, I think we only have like 2 weeks left of Mercury retrograde, I'm pretty sure. Mars will start to go forward again at the end of the month. So hang in there, everyone. It is going to get better. Then after that, we have Venus retrograde, which is not as tough, emotionally speaking, as what we've been going through. So, like I said, all of this is for a reason. You know, it's about working through the shadow side, working through the kind of, you know, the dark stuff, you know, childhood issues, things like that. So it is for, you know, a very good purpose.
I think this interview is very timely because it's something that I think people will benefit from and benefit from hearing that, because this is, yes, the last few weeks, this Mercury retrograde and eclipse season and Mars retrograde all put together has been, I think, a challenge for, well, everyone. And that goes for people who know about astrology, who think about it, who know Mercury retrograde is happening, who know Mars retrograde is happening. You've got Mars retrograde happening and, well, California's on fire, the biggest, you know, fires they've ever had in the north part of the state and such. And so, you know, for us that kind of know what's going on, have some insight, it's very helpful, but then many don't. So for just endless people out there, they've been living through quite the challenge. And maybe one of the things that changes it, puts it all in better perspective, is you can see this Mars retrograde and this Mercury retrograde and the eclipse season as it's your pilgrimage, really, into, when you look at it very personally, into how it affects your chart. So really, I look at now, I was thinking of while we've been talking, is that especially when it comes to retrogrades like Mars and also Mercury retrograde, which happens 3 times a year, look at it as a pilgrimage into your own stuff, into how it affects your chart. It's a very personal experience.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, like you were saying, we know about astrology. The best thing about astrology is that when we do have, you know, difficult times, we know. We can look at the astrology chart and the transits, and we can kind of get a very good idea as to when it's going to end. So, you know, that's why everyone should get their chart read.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I never give myself Mercury much leeway. I'm like, nah, I've never been much of a shadow person. I mean, maybe I should believe it, but I think Mercury kind of clicks on and clicks off when it comes to retrograde. I've never put a lot of weight on the shadow period before and after.
Yeah, the shadow period can actually be more intense than the actual retrograde. You know, I think the shadow period that comes after the retrograde is usually quite intense, and, you know, it feels like, you know, Mercury isn't direct, so we just have to remember that we have a little bit longer to wait after that. But yeah, you know, I'm sure that most people out there are going to be happy that when this retrograde is done, because it has been a very hard one.
Yeah, I usually handle the shadow periods before and after just with denial. That's usually what I do. I think, no, it hasn't started, or no, it's over. No, we're done.
Yeah.
Although that's probably not very effective, but we all have our stuff to work on. That'll be part of my pilgrimage this retrograde season. Our retrograde period and fire season. And, well, thanks for your time today. This has been great. And what I'd say is, hey, where can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, you know, they can check out my website, www.scorpiomoonkarmicastrology.com. There's a bit about me. I, you know, the type of readings that I do astrology, past life, relationship compatibility. You know, I can do a reading on whatever the person needs. Or, you know, you can look me up on Facebook. My name is Fiona Edgar. I also have a little page on Facebook where I do regular astrology updates. If you just type in Scorpio Moon, Karmic Astrology and Tarot, it'll come up on Facebook. So yeah, you know, everyone is welcome to connect with me if they wish.
All right, well, that sounds great. And thank you so much